item 76.
Accept report on crowd control and the Portland Police, a policy review conducted by the crowd control work group of the Citizen Review Committee.
Chief O'Day and others are here to present this report. And I think it's the chief's first official appearance in front of the city council as chief. Welcome.
Thank you. And I think it'd be most appropriate for them to present their report first, and then
okay.
I'll follow on.
Great. Welcome.
Thank you. Hi. Good afternoon, Mayor and Commissioners. my name is Derek Reinke, and I am the research analyst with the Auditor's Independent Police Review Division. I'm responsible for the division's database, all of our tracking of trends. Most of the reports that you see come out of our office, I have some kind of hand in those. In addition to basic operating stats that we report quarterly and annually, we also do various policy reviews. You may have seen our recent hip-hop review that our director had a hand in. The Citizen Review Committee also does a number of policy reviews. The 11 volunteers on the CRC listen to community input. They conduct reviews and research. They make policy recommendations in addition to their regular hearing of appeals and general advising of the IPR and the Police Bureau. They form work groups or subcommittees that review areas of public concern. And another part of my role with IPR is to strongly support these research efforts, facilitate and coordinate whatever kind of national research or other things that they might need to do in those roles. So the report that you have in front of you is the end product of the crowd control work group, which was formed in the wake of Occupy Portland, not the more recent events, but this is more of an effort that's been going on for about 2 years, where this work group started off holding a large public forum with a lot of the Occupy Portland folks, and then they started with interviews or meetings with representatives of folks from Portland Cop Watch, from the AMA Coalition, ACLU, and National Lawyers Guild, a few local defense attorneys, one judge here in Portland that heard many of the Occupy cases. They then started talking with some other groups like the OIR group, which is consultants that come in and review the Bureau's officer-involved shootings. They talked with some folks from the city attorney's office, and they asked some questions and had meetings with the Police Bureau's incident command and rapid response teams. They also invested time walking along at protest marches. They were involved in May Day and some other events like that. They walked both within the crowd, and at some other events they shadowed the Bureau's responders, attending some of the Bureau's pre-planning meetings and some of their roll call events and things like that before marches. So I think this is a work product that's been informed by a number of different angles and certainly developed with a lot of volunteer time and effort on their behalf. I also wanted to highlight quickly what this report is not, and I don't do this often, but I think in this case it's kind of important. So this report is not a comment on the Bureau's proposed revisions of the crowd control directive. So there was a little bit of confusion there based on the timing. The Bureau is doing a process now where every month or so they're posting 2, 3, 4 directives at a time up for public comment. And it just happened that the crowd control directive, they'd made some changes to that, and they posted this the month of September up for public comment. The work group that had been going on for about 2 years was very close to an end product, about 90% done. And I think they used that kind of as a motivation or as a window of, let's get our stuff done, get it off to the Bureau while they're studying this particular area. So the report itself isn't necessarily a thorough review of any changes that were made to the directive. It's not necessarily a commentary on that. But based on the timing, it was something that they wanted to get in during that month. And to the Bureau's credit, they've held off on making final revisions to that directive until this CRC process wrapped up. And in fact, we've still been meeting. We had a meeting with the chief just this week on Monday where he probed us a little bit more about what was the thinking behind some of these recommendations and how could we take some action on those. So that was great. And also, this report is not a comment or investigation of any specific incident. So just in the last few months, for example, we've seen, since the Ferguson and New York City grand jury decisions, we've seen a number of protests and kind of a new series or a new wave of activity in Portland, especially on the Tuesday and Thursday surrounding Thanksgiving. IPR heard from 30 people on that Monday following Thanksgiving, and we are doing an independent investigation into what took place in those protest events. This this report is more the end product of a two-year look into the policies in this area. At this time, let me introduce Rodney Paris, who's the chair of this work group. He's also the outgoing chair of the CRC. He'll discuss some of the group's major findings and recommendations. Rodney is wrapping up a 3-year term on the CRC, so I hope you'll also thank me, join me in thanking him for his volunteer service to the city.
Thank you, Derek. So Derek summed up our work pretty well, the process that we went through in working on this. You have the report in front of you. I'm not necessarily going to go through and read all of our recommendations. We did make a number of recommendations. I think you could put them into some logical groupings. The first grouping, I would say, has to do with equipment. So both around sound trucks and name badges, we made recommendations to beef up the existing capability of the sound trucks. Officer O'Day did say at a more recent protest they had access to a more high-tech device from a manufacturer that they feel did improve their ability to communicate with the crowd. But I have been in other protests and heard a lot of public feedback that at times the equipment that we had at some of those protests was not adequate to reach all members of the crowd, especially in a confusing, chaotic situation like that. With a lot of other noise going on, it sometimes led to miscommunications and misunderstandings about directions from the Bureau. The second one is around name badges. We heard a lot of feedback. One of probably the top things we heard from the community was their desire that all officers involved in Portland monitoring crowd situations have name badges. There have been in the past some jurisdictions that did not want to go along with that. Chief O'Day has done some work on that. I think there's been some agreements from some of those jurisdictions now that will be more standardized going forward, but we believe that's important. The next recommendation, 3, was on crowd control training. The Portland Police Bureau has been conducting training for both themselves and other agencies around crowd control. We believe that's important, especially as we bring in other agencies to the city to help us. We want to make sure that those agencies have the same sort of training that our officers do, and that we beef up the training for our own officers around how to handle crowds and deal with those difficult situations. Number 4 is around the use of gear and military-style clothing and tools. Again, this was a common concern that we heard from the public, that the presence of that hard gear equipment can be something that they feel is inappropriate in some situations, that the Bureau feels that it's a good tool. But if you read some of the information from oversight agencies, from other jurisdictions, there is some best practice out there that keeping that out of a crowd control situation until you absolutely need it is a best practice. So the Bureau does do that and has been continuing that practice. We think that is the right approach, and to continue that or increase that, to keep a de-escalation frame of mind until you really need that sort of tool. Again, that you see a lot of that along with the Ferguson protests and some of the images you see from those protests of really where the police look more like soldiers. That was really the concern that we heard from the public. Community relations, again, this would probably be beyond just the scope of crowd control. I think the chief's recent appointment of a new command position to deal with community relations is important. I think, but even within the crowd control area, we think it's important. Having police presence at some of these events, making sure they get out into the neighborhood and know the people that are involved in some of these protests. Officers should really have that as part of their job description to help develop trust and confidence in them by the individuals and people that they serve. Again, going through some of these other ones that were, I'd say, more of the ones that we heard the most about, 7, 8, and 9, and 10 have to do with documentation and being transparent, making sure that the permitting process is clear and straightforward, that crowd expectations and information for crowds about how to get permits, what sort of things the police will and won't allow during a protest would be helpful for crowds. Publishing standard operating procedure. I think the Bureau has some concerns that they wouldn't want to release confidential information about tactics, but even having those available so that they could be part of an audit by CRC or IPR even, to make sure that they are following their own standard operating procedures. We feel that would be important. And things that can be released publicly about general standards, we think that would help to build that transparency and trust. Number 10 is around the crowd control directive itself. We feel that more should be written into that preamble around de-escalation as an effective tactic to avoid confrontation. and just overall work on that directive, which is currently up for review and has been. And we are thankful that the Bureau held off on finalizing that until we could finalize our process. That was very helpful. 11 is training officers regarding speech not to target individuals based on political affiliations. We did hear from some members of the public that believe the Bureau unfairly targets people that were supposed anarchists or members of the Black Bloc, another group. We would encourage individualized assessments, not assessments of people based on their membership in a particular political group or organization. 12 is, again, a little bit broader than just the crowd control situation, but we did hear from people that had a difficult time getting their property back after a crowd control incident where they may have been cited or arrested. We've heard about that from citizens in other areas as well, that sometimes those are held out far out northwest Portland, and people that may not have access.
Hey, please, let him speak. We'll let you speak, but you, ma'am, you need to let him speak. You need to let him speak. You'll be asked to leave if we can't let people speak. One more time, everybody gets to have their say, you also, but one at a time. Go ahead, sir.
Okay, thank you. So making sure that process is a robust process and fair to people that have that, that are involved in that situation. So those are our recommendations. As Mr. Ranke said, we did meet with Chief O'Day earlier this week. I think he's amenable to at least looking at most of these. I think there's some concern about a couple of them, but I'll let you speak about that. But again, we thank you for inviting us here to bring this important issue up. It's been an ongoing issue for years. I think we've kind of wrapped up our work, but this will be an ongoing issue. We know the CRC will have an important part to play on that, as one of our main functions is gathering public feedback. So we will continue to do that. We hear complaints. We hear appeals on those complaints. So it'll I know it will continue to be a focus of the CRC.
Thanks for your volunteer service. I know we've got some questions.
Thank you for your work on this report, thank you for your work on the Citizens Review Committee. I'm curious as to why there's no discussion of the mounted patrol and the use of horses in crowd control.
The use of horses came up a couple times from people in the public feeling it was overly intimidating. The Bureau's position on that is that, you know, they feel that's a useful tool to them. We didn't get too much into use of force, use of batons, use of bikes during protests, pepper spray. We believe that the current use of force policy should apply to crowd situations as they would in any other situation. If there are complaints, that they should be filed. We've seen a numerous number of complaints from some recent protests, and those would go through the normal process. We didn't feel like that should be part of our report at this time, trying to figure out use of force for each and every type of tool that a Bureau may use in a crowd control situation.
So let me just summarize what I think I just heard, that you would view a horse as a potential forceful
if
weapon.
If it's used that way.
It could be. So it's in your minds, it was no different than carrying a gun versus using a gun,
it could be used that way. We didn't hear about any particular instances of it being used that way. Most of what we heard about was just people didn't like it being there.
We do have so in IPR we have horse as part of our force database. If we go in as a complaint about force, horse drops down in as part of a use of force in terms of how we count and structure things. So absolutely, there's that acknowledgement that can be something that causes injury that may not be appropriate into a large crowd. I think and absolutely the work group heard that from the community over and over. They also went and explored and asked those questions of the incident commanders, Commander Bob Day, I remember, in Central Precinct. And we were saying, what are the concerns around this? What are, from your perspective, are they useful? And what are, we hear these things that are negative about it. Why are you using them? What are the benefits from your perspective? And I think we heard some things as a work group where they felt, we see both sides of this and can't really solve it.
But from a community member's perspective, it wasn't a big enough issue for you to issue any kind of recommendations, or that you felt it wasn't a problem at this point?
We were trying to balance everything, between the feedback we got from members of, I would say, the people that are active in protests, other citizens, the Bureau, and just balancing all those inputs. We didn't feel like that rose to the level that we wanted to talk about in our report. There's other things as well that we didn't.
Could you just list some of those other things so that?
I mentioned before some of the specific use of force.
Right.
Bicycles came up.
where some protests felt, you know, officers would say that they use them for mobility, for getting around crowds, and there have been instances where they have used them as a wall to direct people. I think there have been complaints.
Excuse me.
Speak more about that, but there have been some feedback we got that officers may have used them to push people, and there's jagged edges on those bikes. But again, we felt that would be a use of force. If there's a use of force complaint, it should fall under the regular use of force.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Other questions? Chief?
Thank you. So late last summer, I had put out for a public comment or revised directive. The directive was put out because we had made substantial changes, really, over the last 2 years in the way we manage our crowd events, our protest events. I then became aware that the CRC was finishing up their work on that, so I directed that we hold taking any action other than continuing to get the public input that we had on that till they finished their product. Then I could look at their product, meet with them, and then have a chance of incorporating that feedback into our process. I want to thank the work group for their process, most importantly for having a very informed perspective. There's frequently we have thoughts and ideas on how we should do certain things, but without asking why do we do them the way we're doing now. So I really appreciate the process that the group went to, talking to protesters, talking to community, talking to the police. That gives me a very valuable document to work from. Briefly, there's two major historical periods in the police bureau where we've made changes around how we manage crowds. The first was back in 2003, 2004, when Commander Sizer was there, and ultimately she really refined our process in reflecting, you know, one of our major roles is to support free speech rather than try to control an event. And our next most major revision in our process has really been the last 2 years. We've been really active in formalizing specially trained crowd control incident commanders who are very up to speed on the capabilities of bicycle squads, of the rapid response team, of mobile field forces. And so with those changes brought, the way we were doing business was not reflective of our 09 directive. So we put out that revised directive to better reflect what we were doing. And I can briefly go through the recommendations if you'll find that helpful or take any questions on any of them in particular, whichever you'd find best.
Wouldn't hurt to briefly go through those.
Okay. The first recommendation they have on the sound trucks, we agree with. That's one that's been a challenge for us. The equipment that we have for making those notifications is not the highest quality. During the recent protest around Ferguson events, we had for several weeks the loan of a very new modern high piece of acoustical equipment that head and shoulders above this technology and completely addresses the concerns that they talk about in here as far as the quality of language. Also, one of our revisions has been to always have a PPB member giving those notifications, then, and it's actually always a PPB supervisor, sergeant, because of the authority that they have. The number two, the name badges, that is something that Captain Elmore, who is in charge of our rapid response team, has accomplished. He's gotten agreement from all of our partner teams that support us in events that they will wear name tags, and they have done so since that agreement has been in place. Number three, the uniform crowd control training, the same. We have formalized spring and fall training. The other departments are invited and attend that training with us. If a department's team can't attend, they'll always send a supervisor so they stay current on the practices that we're doing and the expectations that we need. Number four, around use of the rapid response team and their protective safety gear, and this applies a little bit to the mounted patrol unit, to your inquiry. Our crowd control incident commanders are very well trained in knowing that even showing the rapid response team in their protective safety gear, which we need for many different events, not all of them, but for many different events, they're a part of the planning. We know that even showing them, so we keep them out of sight unless we need them. And same with the horses. They're generally out of sight unless we need them for a particular event as it has developed. Recently, we had an occasion where we were caught a little bit short of resources. In anticipating what we need for these different events, It's a little bit guesswork, a little bit science, a little bit history based on, you know, what information you have. So recently up at we had an event that was a two-part march. It ended up at the Moda Center, and when it was looked like folks wanted to get in the doors, the only resources that we still had at that point were the rapid response team. So that's the one time that's happened where we've deployed them where we wouldn't have intentionally deployed them had we had the adequate number of resources that we want. But know that that's a part of the crowd control incident commander's intent, and they know, you know, just showing them, let alone deploying, what that effect can have. But they're a component that we need. We, you know, at these different events, even recently, you know, where we've taken rocks and bottles and had to reclaim highways. So they're a part of our needed resources. Number five.
What kinds of incidents would require a police in protective gear?
The most recent example would be where a group of folks took control over the highway and started throwing rocks and bottles at the officers. And so that's not something you're going to want to have a regular officer in a uniform going. You need to have your protective helmet, your face mask, your safety gear for when that's happening.
And do you generally wait until it appears that people are going to be throwing stuff?
It completely depends on the nature of the event. It may be that there's an opportunity, if that is what you're believing is going to happen, you know, merely having the rapid response team roll by or deploy, and that can prevent that action from happening when they see that group of folks ready to prevent that from happening.
Doesn't that go counter to what you just said, though, of that just by them showing up, that can escalate things?
Well, you would not want to do is just have your rapid response team, you know, be, here's your people just managing any kind of crowd event. If you're, you know, it may be that, you know, just showing them can have that effect, but it may be that, you know, an event has already gotten so bad you need to have them come in because of the things that you're taking. But there's very much, you know, because it's mentioned here that just showing them can have effects. It can also have an effect of, oh, wait a second, there's the proper people here that are not going to let us do that as well. The frontline officer training about kind of keeping their cool, there's language in that draft from last summer that reflects that as well, and that's also part of all the incident commanders' briefing. The permitting process, the Bureau doesn't really have a role in the permitting process. We have heard that maybe there's a way it could be more friendly, but also on the police Bureau side, the fact if somebody has a permit or not doesn't automatically indicate to us there's going to be problems here. It just means it's going to be maybe harder for us to manage because we don't know the route. If folks aren't telling us, we don't know, you know, the duration, that type of stuff.
So, Mayor, is there any thought of having the police be more involved in the permitting process?
Not as yet. Again, once the permit is acquired by a group, the police Bureau is given a copy and informed that this event's going to take place so they can plan for it, right?
Yeah, if an event holder is going to get a permit, we then become a part of that process.
Mm-hmm. It's really up to the organizer.
Right.
Could I just make a comment on that? The feedback that we got was that the permitting process can be extremely cumbersome and lengthy for people that are involved in some organizations that they would want to get a permit. So we don't want to discourage that. I think a permit can help the Bureau plan ahead of time and reduce the chance for conflict. So I think anything we can do to make that easier for citizens to get a permit should be explored. There are always going to be groups that don't want to get a permit. That's not part of their mission. They feel that's overly intrusive. But where it does work, I think that can be streamlined.
Well, particularly where we might need crowd control and one route might be better than another, it would be both streamlining and encouraging more collaboration, and not just in protests, but including protests such as the Naked Bike Ride, where it would be helpful to know ahead of time where folks were going to be going.
Yeah.
Thank you for the help. 8 and 9, those were actually two points that I was looking forward to more conversation with the group and got some good ideas out of. You know, we even try to be at times as best we can careful about even the words our PIO puts out instead of, you know, traffic will be disruptive. You know, maybe, you know, traffic may be rerouted so that, you know, not necessarily saying this free speech event, you know, is going to disrupt or man, you know, using language that is maybe more inclusive around supporting free speech. One of you know, the publishing our procedures. You know, there's very little. There'll be a small amount of specific tactics that we wouldn't want to discuss, but our directive is pretty robust. That goes out for the public comment piece, and then that'll be online. Training Advisory Council has full access to all of our lesson plans as well. But a piece of information through our discussion earlier this week that I found real helpful is maybe just putting together almost like a frequently asked questions website that generally we could spell out, you know, in general what our expectations would be. So it'd be things like, you know, generally, you know, bridges are going to be off limits. You know, generally, access to the highways is not going to be tolerated. Disrupting, you know, major transportation infrastructure is not going to be, and just kind of breaking down those pieces. So that was a helpful conversation that I really, really appreciated earlier this week.
And I want to just elaborate on that because I had some questions after one of the recent events, not protests, but events, which, again, I think you're right, reframing it, and it's not disruption, it's a rerouting. It's part of what we do here in Portland. I think that's very important. So I got some feedback because you mentioned that bridges are off limits, and I said, why? And the answer is that some bridges people tend to climb when that there's an event, and that's not safe. So it's then better to block off access to the climbable bridges. The bridges that have access to the freeway, obviously pedestrians on freeways is highly dangerous, and so that's another reason. So I hadn't connected those dots, and I think that explaining to citizens that we're not just arbitrarily making up rules, but this is why,
exactly.
I think that would be really helpful.
Number 10 on kind of revising the crowd control preamble, talking about discretion. As talked about, these are not specific. We're specifically, you know, directing officers no individual action. So that is part spelled out in our revised directive, as well as reiterated when the incident commander does their intent during their original briefing. Part of our revised preamble piece in the directive from last summer also, you know, reiterates right up front on our policy piece that, you know, one of the most important roles that the police have is to support free speech events as well. Number 11, talking about training officers to not target individuals, continuing, you know, training and discussing officers that, you know, that's ongoing, that's in discussion and briefings. There's, you know, people, we don't target specific people, we target, you know, behaviors or known histories of folks. So I've been a part of free speech and protest events since 2003 and have seen some of the same people at every single event, regardless of the cause. We know that there are some people that, you know, they have a history of, you know, their role is to disrupt, cause damage, or hijack events. And so there's people like that we know. So what we will tend to do is focus officers around that, people with known specific histories like that. We have a finite amount of resources and a presence around people who have a known history of trying to hijack events or cause damage that can help prevent that. But we don't target individuals based on the message in their speech. We don't target individuals based on their affiliation.
Chief, could you just discuss the practice of so-called kettling, of having police surround particular folks and arrest everybody in an area? Why would you do that?
I've only recently heard that term. The one of the crowd control techniques that the Bureau does have, if we have not been able to disperse people after, you know, repeated opportunities, the crowd control incident commander may make a decision, all right, we're going to arrest this group. We have given them, by the time we would do that, they will have been given multiple numerous warnings to cease what they were doing.
And how is that decision made?
It's based on the incident commander. They've got a lot of different options to them, to include, you know, selective arrest, larger group arrest, but based on the totality of what they had, how much violence has gone on, you know, what kind of property damage has happened, how many people, you know, have been hurt. But they'll look at the totality of that and of their many options, you know, make a decision. Is that the best decision that they want to do? Many of these events will continue on, and when they get to the point of either causing damage or too much disruption, will continue until it stops being fun.
Yes. At what point does the commissioner in charge, the mayor, get pulled into that policy decision of this has gone on too long?
The mayor is generally not going to be a part of an individual particular event. It will be in conversations with me around policy, around what is our practice, you know, what is his expectations around these events. But it would not be fair to him to call him in the middle of an event and say, you know, what do you want us to do? I mean, his direction and his influence and conversation and expectation needs to be well prior to game day.
Well, except that during the Occupy, the whole council was involved in how long is this going to go on, with this particular demonstration, how is this going to be managed. When Mayor Adams was in Asia on a business trip, I was the president of the council, and I was involved on a day-to-day basis of we're expecting this, what is your expectation? So I think, when some of these are political free speech.
Yeah, I've been present for some of these events, and I do believe that it's my job to give general direction, but not moment-to-moment management. I think having incident commanders who have directives that are written down and in the light of day and in public, which is what we're doing, and then have the discretion to make good decisions and consequences for making bad ones on the scene works. For example, in one of the recent protests, I watched the incident commander say, you know, this particular group, based on the way they're operating, I think we should just let them go into the mall and have their protest inside the mall. And no police officer followed several hundred people into Pioneer Place. They chanted, held a moment of silence, and left the building. I appreciate that incident commander having the discretion to make that judgment call, and he made the right call, in my opinion, in that instance. And so, therefore, for me to substitute my judgment moment for moment, you know, in a situation like that would be pretty absurd. But for me to lay down some expectations about the relationship between the police bureau and that particular free speech event is completely appropriate.
So if the incident commander decides that he or she wants to stop or disperse a crowd because of whatever reason, they're not causing a problem, they may just be sitting in an intersection, for example, the incident commander makes that decision, you would then stand by that decision regardless of if that then precipitated adverse outcomes?
I think that's pretty hypothetical.
Yeah, and know that for our incident commanders, they truly are very specifically chosen and trained people, knowing that one of their most responsibilities is supporting free speech and balancing that most, you know, that most difficult event. Every one of those events is critiqued afterward, and it's critiqued again quarterly with all the other incident commanders so that we learn from each of these events.
I think the other piece of it is important is the accountability loop. So we haven't, for a long, long time, I've been with IPR just over 8 years now, I haven't heard of an actual case of kettling that was so documented as this last 2 months ago, or this flashbang grenade that was used down by Pioneer Place. So we're doing investigations of those, and those were an obvious decision by an incident commander that needs to be reviewed for appropriateness. Yeah,
yeah, that's how we should review after the fact.
And I would just say, when we spoke with people with the bureau about kettling, they told us that they do not use that tactic.
Although the term often is, I mean, the way it was presented to us was to kettle up and spray with a pepper spray or something like that. And we were told, yeah, to definitively, we don't do that. That's not trained. We absolutely wouldn't. But again, I was like, well, do you have some SOPs that tell me that or some of that? And that's where some of this info, having more of an info flow, I think would be helpful.
Well, I expect we will get some testimony on this. When things happen in parks, and there's an incident, my rangers are telling their supervisors, and then the bureau director is in contact with me. And if there's a policy question, then I help make that. No, it's a policy as in operations. So I want to make sure that as part of this discussion, we look at the appropriate connection of the mayor and the council in managing injury situations.
I know it might be appealing for some people, for the police commissioner, namely me, to have more sway moment by moment over the operation of the police bureau in a situation like that. but I think in a democracy we might want to be careful about that, in that that would cut both ways. Some mayor might say, don't arrest those people. Maybe I would be more inclined to say that. And some mayor might be more inclined to say, go arrest those people. I don't think you want political officials, mayors included, making moment-to-moment decisions involving who gets arrested.
Not necessarily,
so I'm not sure if that's
what
you were
saying.
People
get arrested. However, I do see a role for the commissioner to be involved in, for instance, a decision about this has gone on too long, let's break it up. If
right.
it's just a matter of it's
right.
gone on too long
right.
rather than it's causing problems.
Right, I hear you.
And then the last one, number 12, insuring properties released back. That was one that was a surprise to me on that. I'm, you know, how we handle property is very strictly regulated. The state is very clear on, you know, the requirements for when you take something from somebody, you give them a property receipt. I think part of it might be based around convenience, and maybe part of it around changes at the jail on what property they will allow an inmate to take in. So I think maybe stuff that historically had been able to be with somebody who's put into custody now ends up in the property room, and it's not convenient in its location. So after our meeting earlier in the week and going through this feedback, I'll incorporate that feedback into the revised directive along with some other input that we got and put that back for the work group to take a look at.
Okay. Are there questions for the chief or our work group member? Or IPR staff.
I just wanted to go back to the beginning one, which is the soundtracks. I hear that we've got the better equipment.
No, we don't.
We borrowed. We had one on loan for a period of several weeks, and it was just a night and day difference on the clarity of communication, and it addresses all the things the work group accurately brought up.
So you'll either be prioritizing that or using it, or using your existing
materials. Now that there is good technology out there to work, that's something we've got to look at.
Thank you for the clarification. My question was also, have we done the training for the staff who are making the announcements in the proper way to make those announcements?
Yes, they have now specific sheets, if you will, a script to follow so that we meet all of the requirements for different dispersals or movement asks.
And have those been discussed with the CRC or other citizens to see if they think that they're clear?
I don't know if part of CRC's group, if they had that at the time. I don't
we didn't see
think
them.
So.
That might be something to consider.
Thank you.
Available? Okay. Good idea. Other questions or suggestions? Thank you all.
Thank you.
Now, I know we have a number of people signed up to testify, and we're going to hear everybody. We have one logistical bobble here, and that is in about 15 minutes, we're going to need to recess for 15 minutes because Commissioner Novick and I have conference call that we have to participate in. So we will take the first few folks and then we'll recess at approximately 20 till and then come back. So our apologies for that interruption, but stuff happens. So we'll take the first three, please.
Okay. First three, please, come on up, are Dan Handelman, Regina Hammond, and Joe Walsh.
Good afternoon. Welcome.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. I was hoping to ask for 6 minutes. I know you have a time constraint now, but since we attended all these meetings, I'm hoping.
Go ahead. Again, we'll take the first three of you, I think, okay. And then we'll probably have to take that break. So.
Thank you very much. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch, and I meant to hand in our testimony. We are extremely concerned that that after hearing from demonstrators, lawyers, members of the public, and from us about the use of weapons at protests, including batons, pepper spray, horses, and bicycles, the crowd control report does not even mention these items. CRC had promised to at least mention the weapons in an other concerns raised during our process section. While many of the recommendations they make are on point and productive, it is the use of violence that most concerns our group, and many people have witnessed or been subjected to that violence over the many years we've been active. We'd also hope that tasers would be addressed because they are allowed by the current and proposed revised policies, and they should not be. We raised the issue of weapons before the committee as a whole adopted the report. They did not remedy this problem, even though the vote came just days after the PPB deployed flashbang devices at a crowd, later kettling people for arrest, which is not theoretical. It was real. Also, it has come to our attention that when analyzing force data, the Bureau on IPR may be considering all force used at one protest action as one use of force incident, which would be highly misleading. If one person is hit with a baton and another is pepper sprayed in the mouth and another is hit by a bicycle, these are three distinct uses of force. Our purpose in these suggestions is to alleviate a practice which has harmed members of our own group and others in the community. Members of our group have been kettled and pepper sprayed, pushed up against a wall by a police horse, hit with police bicycles, and suffered and witnessed other abuses at protests. We have no interest in perpetuating police use of violence against unarmed, peaceful protesters. We oppose the use of the current array of weapons, but we're not going to advise on ways to harm people. That's not our task as a group promoting police accountability. So about specific recommendations, the one about name badges, we asked CRC to recommend that the Bureau and the city work on a state statute requiring all law enforcement to display name tags on their unarmed garments. Did not make it to the final report, and we understand you finalized your legislative agenda last week, but we hope this can be added to the slate. And we have other ideas, too, which are not related to crowd control. With a recommendation about training people from outside agencies, we hope that it will be mandatory for any officer who comes into the city to do crowd control to take Portland police training. Otherwise, the response to the crowds will not be consistent, and it will put the community at risk of harm and both the city and other agencies at risk of legal action. About militaristic uniforms and equipment, we support the recommendation to minimize the presence of militaristic uniforms and weapons, but the phrase "unless absolutely necessary" is too vague and should be better defined. There is such a thing as too much discretion, and I think that phrase exemplifies it. On the community relations recommendation, we appreciate the CRC added a sentence that says the PPB should be aware that not all community members and or groups are open to police contact. We noted that there will always be members of the community who do not wish to interact with the police because of their militarism, violence, racially imbalanced enforcement, and other injustices. While there's nothing wrong with recommending more contact, it should not be seen as a means to resolve problems in crowd situations per se. Furthermore, we've received and heard of other people receiving unsolicited contact from the Bureau ahead of protest actions, which doesn't feel community-oriented, but comes off as kind of an invasive way to collect information on political organizations. Organizers who had the PPB post their Facebook page event were very troubled by that approach, for instance. On a permitting process, we agree the permitting process is cumbersome and should be centralized, but we support the organizing of protests without permits, as permits are not always required. And some would argue that they are undue burdens on free speech. We believe strongly the First Amendment event should not have been cleared through the police. So, I respectfully disagree with the suggestion to increase the amount of police involvement in that process. They have plenty of say right now. In process issues, the chief mentioned, and this is the first time that I heard the story about how they came to be hearing the crowd control directive in September, when CRC has been working on this for 2 years. So it may just be a case of left hand and right hand not knowing what each other is doing, but Captain Famous, who's the head of professional standards, attends every CRC meeting, and certainly he knew they were reviewing this directive, and I think it was very strange that the Bureau put this out while CRC was still working on their recommendations. I'm glad that the chief is waiting to hear the CRC's recommendations. I hope he listens to the rest of the community today, too, before making any changes to that policy. In the section about work group activities, the CRC noted that the force complaints are sustained less often than other allegations, but there's no analysis of why that should be so. And I think that they're trying not to draw conclusions, but I think when we reviewed the IPR's annual report, we noted there's less than 1% of all force allegations have been sustained over the entire course of IPR's existence. I also wanted you to know that I brought an article that was written by the police chief from Nashville, Tennessee. I don't know if you read about what happened there after the Ferguson grand jury decision, but the chief there let the citizens who were protesting get out on the freeway, told the people who were upset by it, well, it could be a traffic accident up ahead. You have to wait in traffic from time to time. That he gave them the hot chocolate. And then somebody wrote in and complained about this, and he wrote back a very compelling letter, which I'll also enter the record for you. And finally, I want to point out there's always discussion about violence at protests, and most of the time that violence is coming from the police. And nothing, to me, illustrates that better than the case of the Oakland undercover officers who were banging on windows and dressed in masks and then They were unmasked by the protesters and drew their guns on them. I hope you all saw that in the media. Bear in mind, it's often when you hear about a violent protest, the violence is being perpetrated by the police.
Thanks, Dan. One clarification and a question. One, either I didn't say it very well or people misunderstood me. I didn't say kettling was theoretical. I know that was done at that one of those Thanksgiving week protests. My thought about what was theoretical would be for me to be personally managing the question of when that happens. So that to me seems awkward at best. Secondly, you talked about the unless absolutely necessary standard. What would you recommend?
Again, you know, we said we're not going to try to impose the, you know, we'd rather not see these hard shells and weapons come out at all.
Ever?
I think that Chief O'Day made the point that he thinks there's some people who get intimidated by it and then they don't do something bad. But there are other people who get intimidated by it and say, I'm never going to a protest ever again. There's military police there with these giant weapons. I don't feel like my kids are safe. I'm not going to come anymore. So you have to understand that the presence of those officers it sends a very bad message.
I do understand that. But so my I think point is, what's the standard for when that gear gets used?
I think that's something that the community and the police bureau should talk together about and make it more specific than absolutely necessary, because what they think is necessary is different from what other people might think is necessary.
All right. Well, I'm interested in hearing suggestions for what that standard should be, because I share the sensitivity that as soon as that gear goes on, it changes the perception of the police, if not the willingness of people to participate in protest. I get that, but there has to be a line at which reasonable people would say, okay, I guess they have to use that gear now. I want to hear what people think that line is. This is an attempt at drawing that line. Granted, it involves a lot of judgment in interpretation possibilities and what those words say, but I'm interested in what words you'd like better. And I'm going to take one question and maybe your testimony, and then we have to break. I'm sorry.
Mayor, I was actually just going to suggest that, I mean, sometimes you can save a lot of argument interpreting either law or policy by giving some examples.
Yeah.
So it may be that you can't do much better in terms of an overall arching statement than absolutely necessary, but if you add a couple of examples, people would agree would be appropriate, it would help.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Good suggestion. Welcome.
Yes. Mayor Hales, Commissioner. My name is Regina Hannon, and I'm a member of Portland Cop Watch. And I sat in on the crowd control work group meeting starting in June 2012, and as part of the public, provided input. When the work group report finally came out in September of 2014, I was absolutely dismayed to read there was nothing whatsoever in the report dealing with the weapons. And I want to stress they are weapons and not tools, as is so frequently said, that the police use against people exercising their rights of speech and assembly. And to me, that was the whole main crux of the issue of crowd control. I felt that my input was helpful in that I have personally experienced the use of some of these weapons. I have been pushed by a baton. I was pushed and intimidated by a very large horse. And some while back, I was kettled and was pushed into a wall with a group of other people. And the police then brought out the pepper spray and indiscriminately sprayed the group. I brought this up many times and was always told, well, they don't do that now. But I guess that happened recently. I have also been subjected to conflicting instructions that the officers give to the crowd about where to go and where to move and where to stand. I think that the use of horses in crowd control is unconscionable and inhumane, both for the humans and the horses. The horses need to be put out to pasture. And it was very disheartening to recently learn that the police are now resorting to the use of flashbangs in crowd control. And the report also referenced that hard gear, and we've talked about this, some can raise tensions and confrontations. And I realized this so much because I happened to be present at Chapman and Lounsdale were supposedly cleared of people from Occupy, And I stood and watched as up the street marched many officers, and they are all arrayed in their hard gear and their weapons, and then following them was the mounted patrol, a number of huge horses. And all of this in order to face a group of unarmed folks. Had it not been so outrageously inappropriate, it might have been amusing in that such a display might bring to mind the battles of Hastings and Waterloo. And we request, as per our email recently to you and the report we're submitting, that you not sign off on the report without addressing the police use of weapons and the other issues we have identified. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions?
Can I just clarify something? This is the auditor. Are you suggesting that we should not even accept it?
I am at this point, unless some of the issues that we are raising are addressed. And I think the use of weapons, which is not in the report at all, that should be addressed, because that's the important aspect of crowd control.
Thank you. Again, I'm sorry that we have to do this, but I want to recess the council till 4 o'clock. I know, Mr. Walsh, sorry, but we have an appointment here that we can't miss. So we'll be back at 4. Thank you very much.